Hello and welcome to the launch of the Health and Happiness Show. I'm Edwina Griffin. I look forward to being with you each week where I'll be speaking with inspiring thought leaders, researchers and individuals around the causes, effects and the path to finding health and happiness. How do you measure success and happiness in your life? Is it money, family, health? My guest today is a successful entrepreneur, film producer, director and all-round great guy. After many years of financial success, illness caused him to shift his focus from wealth to health. He set out to heal himself and succeeded and has inspired millions of people around the world with his film, Fat, Sick and Nearly Dead, which shares his story and the stories of many others he met along the way. I'd like to welcome to the show Joe Cross. Joe, thanks for joining us. Hello. Seem to be having trouble hearing Joe. Can you
hello, I'm here, Eddie.
Hey, Joe, could you hear me just then?
I could.
Anyway, welcome to the show. We've got you now.
That's all right. I'm coming to you live from Los Angeles, and we're having a little bit of trouble with the cell, but I'm now on a line and all good. So thanks for that introduction.
Fantastic. No, that's fine to have you here. Now, for those who haven't seen your film, can you share a bit about sort of where you were when you started? Like, what point were you at the beginning of the show versus the end?
Sure. Well, I was, as the title suggests, I was fat, I was sick, and in my estimation, I was nearly dead because I'd sort of reached 40 years of age, and I'd got to a point where, I had spent a lot of my effort and time consuming food that really wasn't food, that had put on an enormous amount of weight, that I'd been sick for 8 years. I'd been taking medication night and day every day, and if I didn't take the medication, I wasn't really able to function. I felt that that really my life was high blood pressure, with high cholesterol, it was going to be shortened by a number of years. Like the average Australian man dies around 81 and a half, and I was sort of thinking maybe 65 would be about my limit. So, So I just sort of felt that what was it all for? And I'd sort of been pretty stupid, been young and stupid. And I've got a saying now that we spend the first 40 years of our life trying to kill ourselves and the next 40 trying to stay alive. And so I got to that point where I felt, I thought I was pretty smart, but I ended up being pretty dumb. And so I wanted to do something about it.
Yeah. And what was the, a lot of people sort of know that they're overweight and know they should do things. You seem to get to that point where you actually, what was that point? Was there a tipping point for you where you actually went and made a change, you took action? And was there one particular event that shifted you into that next stage?
Yeah, there was. For me, what's interesting about the weight is that, I never needed anybody to tell me that I was fat. I kind of knew it all the time. In fact, I've never met anyone in the world that needs to be told that they're fat. We all know, those of us who are overweight know. And it's not something that you need reminding. You see it every day. You get out of the shower, you look in the mirror, you see it. And so for me, the knowing that where I was wasn't the issue. It was more the fact that I had tried to do so much about it so many times and failed. That was the point that I got to, that all of the false starts, all of the times where I procrastinated, I'm going to change this, I'm going to do that, I'm going to join this club, membership, I'm going to do this. And all the false starts, Edwina, I'd kick off and I'd go and then I'd fail and then I'd feel worse and then I'd end up going back into my shell or going to my creature comforts of sugar, fat and salt and nicotine, alcohol, et cetera. But what actually happened in terms of, so then all the false starts, say, all from the 30s, so to speak, because I really didn't have this problem until I sort of hit 30. In my 20s, I was fairly active, playing football, I was fit, I was more athletic. It really occurred to me sort of between the age of 30 and 40 when I went off the rails. And so it was the fact that I turned 40 on my 40th birthday, and I looked in the mirror the next day. I was hungover. I had a huge Chinese meal the night before, smoked two packets of cigarettes. And the fact of just having a 4 in front of my birth, age, instead of being 31, 32, 38, 39, all of a sudden I was 40. And I kind of remembered had this sort of flashback of when I was a kid that I remember, you know, being at school and friends of mine's dads having heart attacks in their 40s. And I remember, you know, when you're 10 or 12, you think 40's pretty old, you know? And so here I was. I was, like, questioning who put me in the time machine that sort of zapped me from, like, 10 to 40 and had it, where did all the time go? So I kind of realized at that moment on the day after my 40th birthday that, you know, I looked in the mirror and I looked 55 and I really had this sort of like, boy, you're stupid. You've got to do something about this. You really, really have to. No more excuses. So it took me virtually a year from that date to really get organized as to what I was going to do, because you just can't, you know, wake up one morning and change your life. Or you can, but I can't. I'm not that sort of person. And so I really needed to make some big changes, like, you know, get the work. The work was a big excuse for me. So I had to really slow down and get things in perspective on where I was focusing my energy and time. I needed to sell some of the companies that I was managing and operating and owning and really scale my life down to really what people see when they watch this movie. They see the very beginning of me trying to make that change. And that happens really a year later when I'm 41.
Mm-hmm. And so when you did go down the path, did you always envisage it being sort of a juicing mission, or did it start as something else?
No, the original idea was purely to get off the medication. The weight was only secondary, to be perfectly frank. You know, I wanted to not have to take pills. I wanted to be healthy. I wanted to be able to wake up in the morning, not have to go to the medicine cabinet, you know, crank open four or five pills, take them, remember that I need to take them in the night time, remember that I need to get prescriptions filled. You know, just be very conscious about certain things I had to do in my life to make sure that it didn't flare up. And, you know, it was really, it was a huge burden and like a penance. You know, it was like a sentence, you know what I mean? Like I was sentenced to this pain. And I wanted to get rid of the pain, the pills, and I felt that was really what the priority was. So, you know, the idea was, if I'm sick and the body can self-heal itself, why aren't I self-healing? Why am I not repairing myself? You know, why is my body doing this, and everywhere else I look in the world, you know, there it's not happening to them, like the poor Joe syndrome, you know what I mean? I was walking around falling, tripping over my bottom lip. And it wasn't until I sort of said, right, well, maybe I'm to blame. Maybe I'm causing this, you know. Professor Ron Penny, who's one of Australia's leading immunologists, said to me, he said, Joe, 70% of all disease is caused by lifestyle choices. 70%. I went, wow, well, maybe I'm in that 70%. Wouldn't that be good? Because if I was the one causing this and I could heal it by doing something that I was doing to myself or stop something I was doing to myself, I thought, wow, that could be very interesting. So that's how the original concept or idea of just eating plant food came from. And it wasn't until later that I thought the juicing part, like supercharging it with juice to begin with, would be beneficial.
Yeah, so can we talk a bit about that? Because a lot of people are aware of sort of the raw food movement and blending foods and things, but what's the point of difference between that and juicing that caused you to shift into the juicing option with the huge success you had with that?
Right, so my logic for doing this, and I did this purely from logic. I mean, I'm a logic guy. I mean, I'm a business guy, you know, that's what I'd done for 25 years of my life until this point, whereas I didn't go to university. I left school when I was 17 and I sort of, you know, had my own businesses when I was 15 kind of thing, and that's what I've been doing all my life as an entrepreneur. And that's solving problems. So I sort of, when I hit 40, realized that I was a problem and that I needed solving. So I shifted efforts to me and really focused, and I looked at my body and I knew I was sick and I knew I was fat. So I kind of asked this question, you know, why do we as human beings have this ability to get fat? Like, why do we store up all this fat? And what is it? What's the benefit of that? Mm-hmm. And it didn't take me long to pretty much work out that you know, we are 4 million years old, the human race, and Homo sapiens about 200,000 years old. And if you think about that, that I'm not really 40, I'm 4 million years old, then why have I evolved the way I've evolved? Why am I the way I am? I started to realize that there's three things we need as humans to stay alive. We need water, air, food. And air is the most immediate thing we need. If you take away my oxygen supply in 5 to 10 minutes, I'm dead. If you take away water from me, it's like, you know, 2 to 5 days, depending on conditions, or maybe up to 10, really depending on who you are. But, you know, you don't survive very long without water. But food's a very different scenario. I mean, food, people can last months, you know, 2-3 months without food, depending on how much energy they're carrying on their body. In other words, how much fat, how much muscle they have, how much stored up energy, how much stored up food. So I looked at my body in a very different way when I started to think like this. I actually looked at my body as I'm like this stored up refrigerator with like all the meals I've been eating for the last 5-10 years are all in my body. They're in my gut. They're sitting there in my tummy, my big fat tummy, and they're sitting there. And I just haven't used them up yet. And then I started thinking about, well, why don't we carry all this air around? Why don't we have these air supplies, like 10, 12 hours of air? And the answer, of course, is that air is abundant. And so we never needed to evolve to store air because air was always there, but food wasn't. Food is something that has not always been around. And so we evolved in this ability to store it up for lean times. And the problem with today, Edwina, is there's no lean times, certainly not for Joe. There weren't any lean times for me. I was going from buffet to buffet, from aeroplane to aeroplane meal to, you know, pub to pub. So I never really had any lean times. So I thought, wow, what if I create my own lean times? What if I create my own famine? But just doing water didn't seem logical. And then with the combination of realizing that for the most of those 4 million years, and I mean most, like, you know, 90%, we only ate plant food, and predominantly that's been the base diet for humans in our existence has been plant food. I mean, plants don't run away from us like animals do, so they're much easier to catch. And it's kind of like, okay, so we've evolved to be the most successful species on the planet consuming all of this plant food, all this green, orange, red, yellow, purple stuff. So what if I just consume that and to create my own famine, what if I juiced it to begin with? What if I do the double whammy of juicing only, so creating a famine, and what if I just, you know, drink the nutrients? So that's kind of the logic I applied. Now, of course, since then, I've learned a lot more about what's really going on in the body and how it's different from eating foods, for example. So, but that's, you know, to answer your question about how I got there in the first place, that's the logic.
Yeah, great. It gives a whole other meaning to why people are doing it. Because I know at the beginning of doing the juice, and I've worked with clients who followed your program, and I found a few people have really struggled at the beginning, and it's kind of great to have that background and motivation to give them another level, because in that first few days it is very challenging. How did you deal with the first few days, and do you have tips for people when they're trying to get through that initial sort of emotional roller coaster and physical often roller coaster?
Absolutely. So I'll take your question in the way I did it. I just did it because the goal was bigger than the pain. So what I really wanted to you know, get to in terms of getting off pills, that was the most important thing for me. So by having that as the goal, that's how I overcame the pain in the beginning. But the main part of your question is, what are the tips and what's going on? So here it is in a nutshell. Your body right now, as you sit and do this interview to me and everyone listening, what their bodies are doing is they're doing a fantastic job of what they're supposed to do, which is to keep you alive. So your body is absolutely, everything it's doing is about keeping you alive. There's the brain that's regulating the liver, the kidneys, the heart, the lungs, the stomach, the bowel. Everything is in place, is trying to work in this system to keep you alive. And part of what I said earlier about air, water, and food, we have these mechanisms that are built into us to ensure that we, you know, breathe, that we drink, that we eat. I mean, to give you an example, what's the mechanism to make us drink? It's called thirst. If you never had the sensation of thirst, you could die because you would forget to drink water and you could die. Mm-hmm. So what's the one for food? It's called hunger. So hunger is our friend. Hunger is built in to make us consume energy to store it on our body. But hunger has worked extremely well for us in the most of those 4 million years, because when we got hungry, all we could really eat was high nutrient, low density of energy, calories, caloric intake. So we could take, say for example, you know, berries and fruits and vegetables and stuff. We could get eat those because we wanted to. Nowadays, that hunger sensation really does work against us in a quite a big way. More on that later. But so in this first instance, people need to recognize that this hunger is really trying to ensure that the host, being their body, actually eats. And so when you actually juice only, say for the first 12 hours or 24 hours, this is a very new sensation where the body's going, by crikey, you know, Joe's not putting any fiber into his stomach. There's no fiber going into the gut. With no fiber going down there, that means he must be on a famine, because that's the way your body knows about whether you're on a famine or not, whether there's fiber in there. And if you're just putting juice down, which is kind of like water when it's like pitch black, I mean, if I poured water or juice over your forehead in the dark, Edwina, you wouldn't know the difference. Well, the same thing goes on in your stomach. You can really absorb water very quickly, which is why you can drink when you're running. But if you drink, if you try to eat while you run, you can't. So when you actually juice and you put all that juice into the system, it's rapidly absorbed, but there is very, very little digestion because there's no fiber. And so because that's the case, what happens is the body thinks it's back on the savannah. It thinks it's in the famine. So the urges, the sensations for you to eat, come on, Joe, eat. Come on, Edwina, you've got to eat. They get louder and louder and louder. Now, depending on how good or poor your diet was before you start this will be the balance of how big or less pain you go through. So usually after 3 or 4 days, people have broken through and there's no longer any suffering of withdrawals. But if your diet has been really, really good beforehand, a lot of people don't have any withdrawals at all. For example, nowadays when I do a reboot of juicing, you know, I can go into day 1, 2, and 3 and I don't even feel anything. Like day 1 or 2 is the same as day 8 or 9 for me. So some tips. The way to do this that I love people to do mostly is to try and eat fruits and vegetables before they start the juicing. So try and do 5 days where they get rid of the caffeine, the nicotine, the sugar, the salt. Try and get rid of those things that are going to be causing you sort of withdrawal symptoms while you're eating. So while you can eat avocado, while you can have salad, while you can have pumpkin and sweet potato, while you can eat. So try and go through the pain during the eating part, if that makes sense. Then after 5 days of only eating fruits and vegetables, then go into the juicing part. And people who do that have a lot more success than those that are going straight from the high-processed, high-animal product diet straight into juicing the next day. Does that make sense?
Yep, that absolutely makes sense. And so when you're just saying you do the reboot program still now, you still juice. So
I juice every day of my life. In fact, while I'm sitting to you right now, I've got a juice in my hand. And this is my second juice today. So on a day like today, being here in Los Angeles, I will probably have about 4 or 5 juices. Like, you know, and this is a decent cup. This is like, in American language, like 20 ounces. In Australian language, about like 500 mils, 475 mils. Mm-hmm. And I will drink, today probably 3 or 4 of these, and today I'll probably only have one meal. And that's kind of how I'll live sort of maybe 25% of the time, 30% of the time. Then about 10% of the year, so in other words, 40 days of the year, I'll juice only. I'll only drink juice for the whole day. And I sort of just do that because I just love the feeling of just being at that heightened level of only consuming, you know, fresh juice. I just feel great doing it. Now, then the other percentage of the time, say 60% or maybe sort of 50 to 60% of the time, I will juice a couple of times a day. I have like two juices a day. I'll have salad for lunch, and then I'll eat a normal meal at dinner time. And then probably 10% of the time of the year, like say 40 days of the year, I'm just like not really a juice, but I will sort of have, you know, those down times where I'm away, I'm on holidays, I'll have a sandwich for lunch, I'll have pizza at night. I won't go crazy, but I'll be a little bit relaxed. And I don't mean to be, but I'm only human, so sometimes I find myself in that position, and usually after a week or 10 days of that, I don't feel too good and I revert back. So does that make sense?
I think that's realistic, and it's people can maintain that if you've got to live. don't finish what you were saying. You say to people.
I was going to say I say to people that if you told me I could never have chocolate ice cream again in my whole life, I'd kind of be really sad because I love chocolate ice cream. And so now I have it, but I don't have it like I used to have it. You know, the number of times of a year that I'll have chocolate ice cream might be, you know, 30 or 40 days of the year, whereas before it was 365 days of the year. So
yeah, right.
So that's how I look at it. And now I haven't had chocolate ice cream for a while, but I'm looking, just as I start to talk about it, I'm looking forward to the next time I have it, Edwina, you know? And I don't know when that'll be.
It's good to know you're human.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, no, that's great. So if anyone's just tuned in, I'm speaking with Joe Gross about his film That Sick and Nearly Dead and their reboot program. Now, just speaking of that change that you've made in your lifestyle, do you find it hard now that you have changed, and you've changed your lifestyle in a dramatic way, do you find it difficult to mix with people who were in your life in your old way of being?
That's a great question. The answer is I don't find it difficult, but I think that they do, if that makes sense.
Absolutely.
I've always been somebody that sort of, you know, rows my own boat. So, but I think that when you're confronted with a friend that has changed, like I don't drink alcohol anymore. Right? I haven't had a drink for, you know, 4.5 years. And not because alcohol is bad for you. It's just because it's one of those things that I've loved the clarity of where I've been. I've loved the fact that I'm completely conscious at all times of my thought, and that I'm in control 100% of my thinking, and I've got clarity. Whereas when I used to drink, I would, you know, be hazy, not all the time, but, you know, the day after or a couple of days after. And it would also, if I drank too much, I'd also be a bit down or a bit depressed, and I don't like that feeling. So, you know, I'm not saying I won't ever drink again, you know, but right now, the fact of not drinking, for example, that can be confronting to friends that do drink a lot, because here's Joe, he's not drinking, and I'm a reminder to them that I should probably drink less, or I should maybe try it. You know what I mean? So
they
end up becoming a mirror in some respects to people, which I don't mean to be, and that's their own way of looking at the world. But there are certainly people that I hang out with that would love to see me back on the drink and the cigarettes and you know, eating big red meat steaks with them. And once again, that may well happen in the future, and I wouldn't rule it out. But right now, I'm enjoying my cigarette and alcohol and very, very occasional animal meat. You know, red or white meat. I have fish, but, you know, very occasional. I haven't had much chicken or turkey, but I've had a little bit of red meat if it's grass fed and in very sparing occasions.
Okay, that makes sense. So given you've been quite successful in your business, very successful as a businessman, has your personal transformation changed the way you do business? Given you're sort of speaking about your shift in your headspace and your mindset, has your approach to business changed from the change in other areas?
That's hard to say, because I think that, you know, you've got to always change and adapt in business, because the world is really, really changing at a rapid rate. You know, it's very, it's very difficult to have just one business plan and not be shifting all the time because things are moving so quickly. And there's no real, like, no-brainers anymore, because once you're doing something and it's working, like, it can shift and not work after a few months and you put all that effort in. So I think it's hard to say. I do know this, that the space that I'm working in now, which is media and trying to create content that's inspirational, educational, entertaining, to try and build a community of people that can be inspired, that can be connected, that can get information, that can sort of have a higher consciousness of trying to not only, you know, heal themselves but heal others. That is a challenge in a world where everything is set up so easy to do the opposite to everything of that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's, and the media is moving so quickly. And then on the other front of what I'm trying to do is on the product side, which is to get products out there that people can consume that are really good for them, and it's trying to raise above the noise of everything else. So, you know, it's not an easy thing at all, but I think that if you can just hold the truth banner up and just be honest and be real, that people can see to that. And then you can make small inroads, and small inroads can become bigger, and then eventually they can become big inroads, and then you can really get to a critical mass, where I call it, you cross the chasm in your business where you actually are sustainable, and you can then really go to the next level and sort of transfer over from a small size business to a medium size business, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. And speaking of being honest and real, like, you're very honest and real in the film. You sort of bear all from the beginning. And you also seem to bring out a lot in the people that are in it, like, such as Phil, the trucky guy, who, you know, he reveals a lot about his family and emotions, which is often hard to have people do. Do you think that is a part of the reason you were able to bring that out in the people, or what was the key element to enabling you to get that really raw part of everyone in the film? Because from a viewer's point of view, that was a key element that I absolutely loved. It was very raw, very down to earth, and I felt like I was kind of with you rather than you preaching to me. You were taking me along with you. Was that sort of always the plan for your film, or
how did you approach
the film? Yeah.
So first of all, the most important thing when I came over to make the film to America, and, you know, I get asked, why'd you make it here? And the answer is that Americans like watching movies about themselves, whereas everyone else in the world can watch American movies. So I figured if you make it here, then one glove fits all. So when I came to America, one of the big things I wanted to do was not create a movie where I was pointing the finger. I wanted to create a movie where I was throwing out a solution, not the solution, but try and put a solution down on the table. And in trying to do that, I felt that telling people what to do wasn't the answer. It was better that I show them and lead by example. So every single person I spoke to, and I spoke to over 350 people in what they call, in the movie speak, man on the street or woman on the street scenes, when I spoke to someone, I would tell them my story first. So I would really open up to them, you know, maybe a 20-minute or 30-minute story about what I'd been through and what I was trying to achieve and why I was doing it. And it was only then, after I had done that and been very open, that was the best way to extract the openness and frankness from people. You know, there's a great saying which I've always remembered from a kid my grandmother told me, is the shortest distance between two people is a smile. And if you can garner the trust of somebody by sharing your own trust first, and trusting them, then it's like human nature is to reciprocate that. We are designed and built and design's the wrong word. We've evolved to be open when we feel someone's open to us, because a partnership or joining can be more beneficial to the greater, to the one and one plus equals three instead of two kind of theory. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that's why I took that approach, and it did work, and it's not surprising to me that it works. And, you know, anyone can try it with a total stranger. Just go up to a total stranger and just, you know, start talking to them in a nice way and be open and kind, and you'll be surprised what they'll tell you.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great feeling that I have in film watching it. It's just what an amazing adventure it was throughout. Like, did you have a ball doing it? It just looks like you were having fun the whole time.
Well, I don't know whether doing 60 Days of Juice is what I call fun. So that would have, you know. You know what?
If I've been traveling
across
anyway.
America, if I've been traveling across America having hot dogs and hamburgers and chocolate thick shakes like I used to, then I probably would have said, yeah, Edwina, it was fun. But, you know, geez, I gained 10 kilos on my trip across America. It wasn't that good, you know. Geez, I tell you what. And I probably would have come back and said, oh, crikey, they're all fat over there, you know, not even looking at myself. So the answer to was it fun? Look, I tell you what I would say was fun. And what I found fun was seeing the changes in myself every day and waking up and really noticing a difference. It was exciting to go to bed at night because I would wake up feeling amazing. I mean, there's nothing like waking up when you're doing a reboot because you just get such quality sleep. You know, your body's not processing and trying to digest the big meal you had. It's not going through all of those sorts of, you know, the engine's not working overtime at night, if that makes sense. So you wake up feeling terrific. You bounce out of bed. There's no hip or knee or ankle joint problems. You can't wait to face the day. And so that's loved. The evenings are tough. Like, by the time the end of the day comes around, it's usually the security blanket of the big carbohydrate, high-fat, high-sugar meal that I used to, high salt meal that I used to consume. Television's on, old habits, behavioral things that you're used to doing, like being in a hotel room, ordering room service, or going down to a diner and bringing a pizza back to your room, watching TV, or, you know what I mean? It's like those things. So it was like, what was fun were the mornings, what was tough were the evenings.
Yeah, because that's the thing, whenever you do a fast or a juicing fast, it's very tough socially. So what did you do in the evenings?
Well, remember, I made a movie doing this. During the movie, it was pretty easy. I'd worked all day and I'd go to the room and then I'd just, you know, suffer in peace. But, you know, like, it was just boring at night, so I'd just go to sleep. But you're right. Now, socially now, I go out. I do everything. I just do it. I go to restaurants and sit there and just bring a juice and sit down with people while they're eating.
Wow.
It doesn't slow me down one iota. The hardest part for doing what I do now, if I'm going to be juicing and traveling, because of the aeroplanes, unless you're in Australia, it's hard to take juice. Domestically, you can in Australia, but internationally, you can't take juice through the security. So I find it difficult when I'm traveling on aeroplanes to do it, because it's kind of hard to manage all of that. But otherwise, I have absolutely no problem doing it. It doesn't affect my social life at all. Now, for most people who are doing it first time, of course it is. But you know what? You know, what I think to people is, if you can't find 10 days out of your life where you can't just do something for you and really just sort of zone out the rest of the world and find this time to re-heal, to really pamper, to really look after yourself, just to give your body incredible nutrition that your body would never, ever have consumed so much phytonutrients, phytochemicals, in its whole lifetime over that period of 10 days. If you can't find time to do that sometime in the next 12 months, I'm not saying find time tomorrow, but sometime in the next 12 months and plan it out, then I would really question about what's the situation in your life that you can't organize that. And I'm not talking about going on holidays. You know, you're kids and stuff, I understand. But find the time to do it. Get organized, you know? Get organized. And I've got hundreds of thousands of people around the world that have done this, doing all types of walks of life, jobs, families. Some mothers have got 12 kids and they can do it. So there really is, in my view, no excuse here to do this other than people are frightened and afraid. And that's okay. I'm not criticizing that. But at the end of the day, when you look at yourself and you're being honest at what I call getting to the house of mirrors, where you have a really good look at yourself, there really are no excuses to not doing this.
No, absolutely. So in the actual movie, I noticed the people that you meet are in the restaurants and truck stops and sort of middle Americans. Have you found people of all different socioeconomic backgrounds open and excited about the program?
Oh, yeah, no,
is there a willingness from everyone?
I've got people that are absolutely flat broke, and I've got billionaires that are doing this. This goes from but we're all human. At the end of the day, we all need those three things I talked about: air, water, and food. And we all need them, and they're equally as important. I mean, obviously, air's the one that we can't go the least amount of time without, but they're equally important. And what goes in must come out, no matter what colour you are, how much money you've got, whether you're male, female, old, young, whatever. So the philosophy of what I'm talking about, and it's not a diet. You know, this is not a diet. This is, you can't juice only the rest of your life. You can juice every day the rest of your life and eat, you know, lots of whole grains and high-fiber foods and small amounts of animal product and very light on the processed food. And that's an unbelievable way of living your life. I mean, that would be that there it is. There's the, you know, you speak to the world experts. That's the best diet right there. You know, mostly plant food, mostly whole grains. You try and have a little amount of animal product and as few processed foods as possible. Exercise. Love, get lots of sleep, and have less stress. There it is. There's a solution to living a long and happy life. So you can.
Well, we're all doing it.
Well, we're not doing it because we're not doing it. Well, some of us are not doing it. Or put it that way, most of us are not doing it because we have got our priorities out of whack. We are focusing on things that are not really as important, you know, and this is, to a certain extent, we're a victim of our own success because we are driven to consume calories. If you go back in time, Edwina, and think about this, you know, for the 4 million years I talked about that humanoids have been inhabiting the earth, the single most important thing that we've had to do is to look for calories, you know, and wars were fought on land. You know, currency, all the system we have today of capitalism is built on the fact that money was traded for grain, and that's where coins came from. And so we've got this, you know, inherent drive inside a human is to hunt and consume calories. And it hasn't been until the last really 50 years that we've incredibly commoditized calories. So much so now, you can walk into your local supermarket for $10 and buy 20,000 calories. You know, you can get 20,000 calories for $10. Now, go and have a look at what 20,000 calories of cucumber looks like. You need a truck to bring it home. so we don't realize that we've created this environment around us where a lot of us, like more than half of us, just consume for the sake of consuming because we're like using this instinctual primal view that, and things have triggered it off. For example, in my case, being mocked or knocked or picked on, bullied at school, that really drove me to being close to sugar. Sugar was my best friend. So now I've got this wiring in my body, which is, you know, when things are going tough and I'm under stress, I go for sugar because that's my friend. That's what makes me feel good. So there's a classic example of an instinctual sort of wiring of a human, which was to make us drive to consume something to eat well, and I've crossed wires there with pain, with threat, with loneliness, and I've connected that with the feeling of happiness, satisfaction, you know, a buzz from sugar. I did that at a very young age, and that has been with me ever since, and that is a very, 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 very difficult thing to rewire. Not impossible, but just very difficult.
Well, and I think a lot of people have that sugar association. You know, as kids, often we were sort of rewarded with lollies and sugar, so that is a big problem with people all around. But it seems you're very strong-minded in, like you say, your motivation for feeling so amazing from the juicing and not getting ill. You know, some positive drivers, some negative drivers to keep you on track. So I guess it sounds like the sort of goal setting that you have set up for yourself is perhaps very important for everyone doing the program to keep you on track.
Well, here's another way of looking at it, which I use this analogy a bit, and people kind of, once they get it. I was at the Sydney Entertainment Centre watching a Spandau ballet concert in like 1989, and I was like 23 years of age. And I remember being there, and the girl behind me, I didn't know her from Adam, she dropped her glasses and they fell on the seat where I had been sitting, because it's a concert, we're standing, right? And in those days, I was up in the nosebleed seats. And I picked up the glasses, and as a joke, I put them on, and holy rock and roll me, I could see. Here I was at 23 years of age, the first time in my life that I'd ever put glasses on, and all of a sudden I could see. I realized that people from distance were supposed to see things clearly. So I had gone through 23 years of my life never putting glasses on, never realizing that things from a great distance were supposed to be clear. I put on the glasses and I can see clearly now. Hot house flowers, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I now have that analogy with rebooting and juicing. So people that do this for 5 or 10 days, they get to a point where they get to know what it's like to be human, where you actually feel what it's like to be a human, where you're supposed to breathe through your nose. You're supposed to be able to see clearly, hear clearly, put your head on the pillow and go to sleep, wake up with energy, not have these emotional roller coaster swings throughout the day of being so like reliant on food, feeling that you need to have that cup of coffee, you need to have that cigarette, you need to have that cookie. You know, this liberation of freedom, of thought, of feeling, of just being human is something that's akin to putting those glasses on. So once people do this, now your perspective shifts. It's like you're on top of the mountain and you love the view and you don't want to go back down to the valley. So it's like, okay, what can I do to stay up here and to continue to look out over this beautiful view? And that's kind of what I find happens when people do a reboot. They get to really know what it's like to be human. I call it human 2.0.
Absolutely. So do you see juicing as a sort of key now for prevention of disease in the future? And what about working with the medical field? Are they supportive of your program? Have you had much experience with
that? Well, I don't see juicing as a thing in the future, like prevention in the future. It's a prevention now. I mean, it works. So it's happening. So, you know, you can repair. Your body is built. It's an incredible organism. It self-repairs if you let it. But you've got to help it. You know, I like everyone to think they've got like an Army, a Marine Corps, they've got an Air Force, they've got a Navy, they've even got a SEAL Team 6, if you like, inside their body. And they're all, those little soldiers, they're all working for you. They're out there to keep the peace and fight disease and get on top of all the bacteria, the enemy. They're doing it for you. If you don't give them the ammunition, you don't give them the fuel, if you don't give them the supplies to fight that fight, they can't fight it for you. In fact, starving them of the nutrition they need to make the fight will only allow the baddies to get on top of you. Hence why we have such high, you know, death rate incidences of heart disease, cancer, stroke, Alzheimer's, diabetes, etc. Because we've got all these, you know, not all of cancer, but everything else I talked about, is seen by the medical community as a high percentage of them are diseases of nutritional ignorance. And when you have 70% of all disease being caused by lifestyle choices, well, I mean, hello. So it doesn't. You don't need to be Einstein. You don't need to be a medical doctor to work out that putting in the right fuel in giving your body the fuel that it needs to operate, it'll operate better. So for me, have I got a lot of feedback from doctors? You bet I have. And, you know, what's incredible is most of it, 95% of it's really, really, really positive for those that have taken the time to watch it. Sure, there are some doctors that go, oh, that can't be good for you, but they haven't. They really haven't taken the time to look at it or to really drill down as to what I'm talking about. So I'm very enthused by the doctors that have seen this and that are buying, you know, a couple of hundred DVDs to give to their patients. I've got surgeons, physicians all over America, Australia that are doing this. So, you know, we're only just getting started. We're only about 2 million people have seen the movie worldwide right now. And so my job in the next year is to get that to 20 million people, because I think the more and more people that become conscious of the fact that we are not supposed to eat as much as we do, we're supposed to go for periods of not eating, we're supposed to eat mainly plant food, you're supposed to feel good and feel alive, and when people can experience that, it is like a drug. And that drug is a natural drug. It's a natural high, which is so good for you, that once people can do that, and see that, then I think it can become addictive to eating well. And I'm very optimistic about the road ahead and the path ahead for those sort of changes.
Fantastic. And you're making it very accessible for everyone. What about the Reboot program? If people are wanting to know, you know, what to do, it's a free website, isn't it?
So they can go to jointhereboot.com and they can sign up, and everything's there. And I've even got a nutritionist that answers questions online for free. On YouTube, for those that haven't seen the movie, they can go to YouTube and look at the extended trailer of Fat, Sick and Nearly Dead. That's a good way to get an idea of what we're doing. The movie's on Netflix and Hulu in the United States for people over here, and they can buy the DVD through our shop at jointhereboot.com. And in Australia, it's in Woolworths, and it's going to be we're going to do a promotion very soon with the Australian Women's Weekly, so they stand by for that big news in May. That's exciting. And then we're going to try and get to the UK and the rest of the world later this year. And, you know, it really is one of those situations where, you know, with about 2 million people that have watched the movie so far, about 300,000, so about 15% have signed up to the Reboot community, which is pretty exciting. So it's a very big call to action film. And there's a bunch of people that are pretty obsessed. They watch it like 100 times and they just use it for motivation, and they're losing hundreds of pounds, you know, which is great. It's very exciting to see.
So, and the people that you have on your Reboot team, like, say, Phil, is he involved in the program? Do you bring people in who have done it themselves, and, or how are you recruiting?
Well, on Facebook, people on Facebook, this is the thing. Once people have done this, as I said earlier, it becomes addictive. They're all on Facebook helping each other. Like, once you've done 30 days or 20 days or 10 days of juicing, you want to spread the word. So there's, on our Facebook page, it's Fat, Sick and Nearly Dead on Facebook. You know, we got over 100,000. I think it's 120,000 last time I looked. And that's a really active community there on Facebook of just people helping each other. So I think that you know, we have this pay it forward mentality, and Phil certainly is doing that in his world. He's got lots of people following him, and he's helping them. And Phil's got plans to become a nutritionist this year, which is exciting, or he's going to become a health coach, I should say. He's going to do the Integrative Institute of Nutrition's course. And, you know, my Reboot team is not big. I've only got like 5 or 6 people on my team because, you know, we're not a big company yet. We're just trying to get the word out. And, you know, it's very much one of these things when you build a community and you give people the tools, I'm trying to do it so it's scalable. And on that scalability, the community really helps grow the community.
Yeah.
Which is a tribe, you know?
It seems like, you know, there's one level of empowerment where people take control and responsibility for themselves, and then they're sharing. Then you're sort of also allowing them to step up again and share with others, which is creates, it's there's a real kind of buzz around what you're creating.
Yeah, well, I'm trying to do that. I'm trying to create that. I'm doing my best.
Well, there's plenty of buzz happening in Oz. Yeah.
It's exciting.
Yeah, and what other visions do you have for the program and the film? Is there anything else you want to share about what your plans are for the future?
Well, I think that I'm blessed to be in this position now where I've got a few hundred thousand people in my community. I want to grow that to a couple of million. I want to get more eyeballs on the movie. I want to create more movies. You know, I've got plans to make more films, more books, all that sort of stuff. Because I think now that if you can create a niche little world here, which is people that are interested in this kind of a lifestyle and you have this as a sort of a way to stay on top of the game, then I think that can be if I can create a company that can empower people to help them do that, where I can give them content, whether it's free or they pay for it, depending on the level of it, where there's a support network in place, and I can use technology to help people do that, then I think that'd be a great way to spend the rest of my life on this planet, providing that kind of service.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much I know you've got plenty of things to be doing today and meetings and things, and thank you so much for taking the time out to be with us on the show today. And
you're welcome. Thanks for having me. It's been great.
Inspiration. No, thank you. And have a great time, and we will all get on the website and join the community and spread the word to get that up to 20 million.
All right, great. Thanks a lot. When the juice on.
Thanks, Joe. Okay.
Bye now.
Speak soon. Bye. If you're wanting to become part of the program, you can go online, and the address for the Reboot program is jointhereboot.com. And if you want to see the film, you can also get copies of the DVD or see where there's a screening near you at fatsickandnearlydead.com. What a fantastic message Joe is spreading. And it's not the thing I love about this program, it's kind of really empowering people, and it's about taking personal responsibility and inspiring others, you know, to take control and regain control of your health and well-being. And with that, of course, comes happiness. So everything that our show is about is what he is doing. Great guy, Joe. It was really fantastic to have him here. Now, next week, we'll be taking a little bit of a different angle, and we'll be speaking to a woman who has written over 200 research papers, a Harvard professor of psychology. And we're looking at health from a perspective of the mind next week, rather than addressing from the physical, we're addressing from the mental. And we'll be having a chat to her. Now, next week, the time will shift. In Australia, we have the end of daylight saving, I'm sorry to say. So the time will be an hour earlier anyway. So it will be 8 o'clock a.m. Australian time. And with the daylight saving change, that would make it 9 p.m. in London and 1 p.m. in the U.S., which is a little earlier than this week. So I hope you've enjoyed joining me. I'm really excited about being on the show. If you have questions, feel free to send them ahead of time via the Facebook page for Untangled FM, and join the Facebook page so that we can interact. And if you have questions ahead for me, for any of the speakers coming up, you can put them up on the site, on the Facebook page. And the untangledfm.com website also has a schedule of all the other shows that are on, and ahead of time what is going on for the next couple of weeks. So I hope you've enjoyed being with me. I have absolutely loved today and loved having Joe on the show, and I look forward to being here again next week. And tune in at 8 a.m., 9 p.m. or 1 p.m. next week. See you then.